This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared. And remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network. Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items, supreme customer service, very low shipping, and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices. And CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran-owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring-up-on-the-internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born on preparation. Order today and use the promo code E2E for an additional 5% off your order. Did you know that several major European countries are at risk of defaulting on their financial obligations? The U.S. economy will suffer substantially if this happens. Inflation is getting worse, and with a European default, hyperinflation is very possible. If hyperinflation occurs, store shelves will be empty within days and food prices will skyrocket. Will you be able to feed your family when hyperinflation hits? BuyEmergencyFoods.com offers the best kind of emergency food, Legacy Premium, with the largest variety available in the freeze-dried food industry. Each meal is packaged for freshness in individual nitrogen-flushed Mylar pouches. The meal pouches are then sealed in stackable heavy-duty plastic containers that are easy to store, easy to transport, and won't be damaged by water or rodents. So, if you're worried about food inflation, economic crisis, unemployment, or natural disasters, then don't delay and prepare your family now. Buy your emergency food supply today. Disasters happen. Don't get fooled into thinking that they can't happen to you. Order today and use the promo code E2E and get free shipping and 5% off on every item. BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, 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 welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci, and also with me is Colorado Ron. How you doing, Colorado?
Good, good. How you doing this morning?
You know, every time we come back from an event and everything else, I feel like we're starting the show all over again.
I know.
It's hard to get into a rhythm.
It is. It's tough, you know, and it's everything. It seems like it takes weeks to get back to normal around the house here too. It's, you know, not just with the show.
No, I agree, and the scary part about it is you know, first of all, to let everybody know, we just came back from Arlington, Texas. We did an Arlington, Texas show, and it was a fantastic event. It was super, super busy. I actually don't know how we pulled it off, but we did. What did you think, Colorado, overall?
I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It was, you know, we had great crowds. We had great participation. I feel like we helped a lot of people. A lot of people came up and thanked us. So, it was awesome. Had a great time.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually had, the vendors were super happy and were saying it was a great event. And I also felt like we reached a lot of people at this event. But the flip side of that is, holy crap, we have another event in September.
I know. Yeah. Just so everybody knows, this was not planned. This last event was squeezed in between a couple of our events, so it's making us scramble for this for the next event.
yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, we debated a lot on whether or not we do this show, quite frankly, for us, it was probably a break-even show monetarily for the company, but we knew that there was going to be a large number of people out there because the Glenn Beck event was going on and there was a baseball game going on. There was just so many people that we could potentially reach that's not our normal customer base.
Yeah.
And then, you know, apparently we're obviously insane because we decided to do it. And, now I'm about 3 weeks behind on my other work. And I know you've been scrambling too to do catch up. And then, like I said, the next event is September 14th and 15th, which is almost exactly a month from now. Today's the 11th.
Remind me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be scrambling, but that's all right. We'll get it done. We'll pull through just like we always do. So, you know, question is, did you lose any animals while you were gone?
I did not lose a single animal this trip. So I still have all my chickens and everything else is still there. Of course, everything that was growing is dead, but that's not because I was gone. It was basically because we actually had our first rain this last week, and it's been a horrible drought this summer. And and I don't know how it's been in Colorado, but I know most of the nation's in heavy, really heavy duty drought. And it was, no different here. And so just about everything that should be green is dead. So no animal loss, but, continued the loss of grass and everything else.
Yeah. Well, we lost one quail. That's it. So we're doing all right. We're doing all right. But
how
not sure what happened. We have 18, so we've lost two total. I've bought 20. So the we got that, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4 rabbits right now. So
you're really gearing up.
I am. I'm trying to anyway. On that drought thing, one of the interesting things here, the little tidbit of information is, did you know that there's no rivers that flow into Colorado? All the rivers here in Colorado flow out of Colorado. None of them flow in.
Actually, I never thought of that.
Yeah, yeah. So here's where all the water starts, usually. So this is kind of the last place that we run out of water, hopefully.
Well, as long as you have decent snowpack, right?
Yep. So, and on the eastern plains, over here on the eastern side of the Rockies, there's a big, great water basin underneath us that extends from Denver all the way out to Kansas. So,
well, that's pretty nice. But the only problem with that is when you have drought, you have to make sure that gets replenished. And basically all of Nebraska and Kansas irrigate, right?
Yep, they do.
And so you're sucking
and that's
up
the
that
hard
water.
Part. There was a time a couple of years ago where we were having a pretty bad drought here, and we were restricted. We couldn't water our lawns, but like twice a week, and they got really strict on us. And then I flew to Phoenix, and that really ticked me off. So I'm flying over Phoenix, and I'm driving through there, and I see all these green, all the grass and all the watering, and that's all Colorado water. It's all coming from the river. And so that was frustrating.
Unfortunately, that happens a lot, and I think Vegas had a big wake up call when California cut them off. Most of the water for Arizona either comes from the Colorado or comes out of California, and I don't know if Colorado cut them off, but I know California pretty much had said, "Hey, look." And all these people that had these really nice lawns and all these golf courses and everything else were completely drying up, and they were drying up quick.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's what happens. when you live in a place that normally doesn't have water and it's kind of man-made irrigation, it eventually happens.
Yeah, well, you know something? That's what you get for... I mean, I think it's great when we reclaim land and we do things, but it, I think when you get a little cocky, you know, like, you know, for example, Arizona's got a lot of good things going for it, you know, but it's basically in the 90s, 80s and 90s became a playground for retired folks. And, you know, they had all these golf courses and everything else. And, you know, Arizona doesn't have the water to supply all that greenery.
No, it doesn't. So, yeah. And like I said, you know, it was really frustrating to go down there and see all those golf courses. And of course, they're shooting out, they're watering the lawn right in the middle of the day. And it was just frustrating to see all that. And it's just like, dang it, man. Here we are in a drought up there, and we're having to, you know, preserve our water, and then I come down here and find out that the water we do send down is watering grass in the middle of the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, and their prices never went up because they were, it was all, they looked at it as surplus. And so,
yeah.
You know, yeah, it kind of kills. Well, I mean, it's a kind of a segue. Next week, I'll be doing Bubba's Bookshelf as the first hour, that usually our 9 o'clock hour in the morning, and letting Colorado Ron sleep in a little bit.
And
I'm actually going to be talking with Marjorie Wildcraft, who does the Grow Your Own Groceries DVDs and stuff. And what we're going to be talking about next week is yesterday the government announced their standing on the corn crops and all the crops because of this drought. And it was horrible. It's like a 17% loss, 17% low since they started recording this information. That's 17% loss of crops is huge, huge.
It is.
And what Marjorie wants to talk about is basically, you know, not just how this affects things like your feed prices for your chickens and your rabbits and your quail and things like that. So feed prices across there, but it's going to affect your gas prices. It's going to affect all your prices in the store significantly. The government yesterday announced that that we had the largest 1 month increase in fuel costs in history.
Wow!
And so it's all this stuff. But what's happening is that all the ethanol companies and the grain feed companies are all worried about how long this drought's going on. So it's not just that we have a lack of 17% loss in crops, but the ethanol companies and the feed companies are rushing out and buying up everything that they can in case this persists. And that's jacking up costs. We saw a 30% increase in feed costs this last week.
Holy moly.
Yeah, we were buying, you could buy a 50-pound bag of feed for about $10, and it went up to about 14 or 15.
And it's funny because wheat has done the same thing. When I was buying a 50-pound bag of wheat several years ago, I mean like 3 or 4 years ago when I first started doing this bulk purchasing, it was $7 for a 50-pound bag.
For 50 pounds.
Yeah, for a 50-pound bag of wheat. And now it's, like, I think it was $14 or $16 last time I looked.
Wow.
So
it's double.
That's double. It's 100% increase. Yeah. It's nuts.
Wow. Yeah, that's and you know, I was just talking to my wife about it last night, and I was saying, you know, I'm seriously considering going to buy about 200 pounds of feed this week and storing it just because – worst case scenario is the price continues to go up, and at that point, I've curbed my, you know, my losses very quickly because I have that feed stored, and then the best case scenario worldwide is that the price drops again, and then I haven't really lost anything. I still have that feed, but I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if I could afford and how many people could afford, their chickens and their their different animals and everything else. If you're going to start paying $20-$30 for feed prices, it's in Texas, about a year and a half ago, we were in a 5-year drought and people were letting their horses and cattle go, just opening the gates and letting them go. And you could go up there and, quality race horses and things like that, dirt cheap because it got so expensive because we had no grass. And people were importing it from California and, that's a long haul.
Yeah, it raised the price across the nation on grass.
And so that's where that's beef prices and horse prices. But now corn affects so many different things. Pigs, just everything. And I'm sure it's affecting more than just corn. That's just my neck of the woods. Like you said, there's wheat, there's all kinds of different feed products this drought is affecting. And man, I'm scared to see how expensive everything's going to get.
Well, and because of the way the trading goes, a lot of product that we depend on to get shipped in, whether it be wheat or things like that. Like for instance, last year I believe it was, with all the fires that happened in Russia, the reason the wheat prices went up is because the wheat that we imported canceled their export of wheat because they were at such a shortage over there. And so the wheat that we have here was being exported to other countries and we were importing wheat from Russia. So that kind of messed up a whole bunch of stuff. So you got to also think of it globally as well.
Wow. That's kind of interesting. I mean, I didn't realize that it kind of went in such a big circle. Although I guess it makes sense because there was an article yesterday in Reuters that was talking about in the Sudan, soaring meat prices is causing like all kinds of issues because Ramadan is starting. They're saying it's like the worst that it's ever been as far as the prices of meat are concerned, because the cost of everything has gone so high, and a lot of these countries import things. And, they're oil countries, and they don't have a lot of ability to raise these things, so everything is imported. I'm interested to see how this is going to have a worldwide effect in countries like, Asia, where a lot of pork is imported annually and everything else. And, again, how it affects the U.S. market in the next, 2 to 3 months. It'll be, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting time, and all around election time.
Of course. That's why it's important to not only have your own year supply of food storage, but also for your animals. So I know it's not very feasible for the bigger animals, but for smaller animals, it is. So I highly recommend people do that.
Well, that's a really good point. I guess I never really thought of it until, like I said, just the night before last when I went and was looking at feed prices. It's like, wow. I mean, even my wife said, well, should we get more for the dogs too? And I was like, well, I never really thought of it affecting the price of food for the dog food. But, dog food is nothing more than a bunch of grains and a bunch of stuff, the same things that are the prices are going up.
Exactly.
So, man, I haven't even gotten the all the stuff that I need for my family. Now I got to start bulk stocking for the damn animals. I don't know.
Never ends. So how are you doing on your food storage?
Oh, I suck.
What?
Yeah, I was actually having a conversation with my family just last night and tonight. And this is a horrible thing to admit. And I noticed, actually, I kind of feel like you were in the same position after seeing your updates and your pictures today, which was this week we got back. And I realized that we've been spending so much time – actually, let me take that back. That's completely not accurate. My family pointed out – not me. I didn't come to the realization. They pointed out that we've been spending so much time trying to get other people prepared. And what I mean by that is we do this radio show, we're running around trying to get ready for the expos, that I've completely dropped the ball. And the whole reason I got into this self-reliance stuff, which is getting my family prepared.
Right.
And it's when I was like, oh, crud, you know, they're right. Because, you know, we talk about it every week and we start going out there. But then, you know, the week comes and it's like, okay, I've got to, here's my list of things to do. And the ones that seem the easiest to forget is, all right, going out there. I mean, like canning season's in full swing and we haven't even attempted to can anything.
Really?
It's been so busy. I mean, it's,
yeah.
You know, we were out there doing that show and my wife came down and we did the show and then we came back up here and I'm catching up and the girls go back to school and everything else. And, you know, we keep talking about it, but it's just, we haven't gotten there. And, you know, I did manage to go out there and split some more wood and finish up, you know, as much, my wood storage. So that's good. Cause it's gotten chilly here. It's not cold, but it's gotten chilly. And, you know, it feels like it's going to be a pretty, pretty harsh winter, is my guess. Last year was so mild. Yours was mild too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really mild. Can I give you a quick suggestion then, as far as canning foods?
Please.
All right. So this is something I found this week, and it is sweet. Okay, so if anybody is interested, and you go to Costco.com, right, and you click on the business delivery. They have bulk pricing for anybody that wants to can. They have bulk pricing on whole boxes, entire boxes of fruits, vegetables, and even meats. And we actually were looking on there, and the prices are ridiculously cheap compared to what you get at the store. I'll give you an example. An avocado usually costs you, you know, on a special, you can get 2 for $10 or something like that. You get a whole box of them. I'm talking like a big box, like probably 60 or something in there. It was like, I think it was like $10 or no, $20. It was $20. So, you know, things like that you can get in bulk and they deliver within 2 to 3 days to your door. Free shipping on any orders over $250.
Okay, I'm confused. So if I go to Costco.com and I push on business delivery.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they come. I'm on here. I'm doing this as we're talking.
Okay.
And then there's
a zip code.
Yep. I did. And then there's grocery and floral. And then you look at. I guess you're talking about bulk food.
Yeah, yeah. So they got bulk food here. Let's see. Where do I go?
No, that's not right. Because that's bulk food. Looks like things like bulk honey and stuff like that.
Let's see here. That's, no, it's now where did I go? Grocery and floral. No, bulk foods. Let's see what that
I
does.
I see meats.
You see meats?
I see meats, but I don't see any vegetables or anything
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it was like under restaurant supplies or something like that. Let me look here.
So you guys are getting this information live.
Yeah, you're getting it live. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, I found it yesterday. I will post up a link as soon as I find it on my Facebook page, the Colorado Ron page. So if anybody's interested, go to Colorado Ron page, and I will make sure it's on there because we were just looking at this yesterday, and it was a ton of stuff. And I'm talking like chicken, a whole case of the chicken for – was it 60 cents a pound? It was ridiculous. It was like, oh, my gosh. And so we were getting ready to order a ton of stuff, but we haven't done it yet. But we started adding to our cart and just kind of adding it up what it would be. But, yeah, it was pretty inexpensive, and we were excited. So I will find that, and I will post up that link on my Facebook Colorado Ron page.
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, my guess is that also it's going to depend on where they're shipping to. Because, you know, it could be that someone types in, like, we're in Iowa, you know.
Right.
We have a Costco. It's in Des Moines. But, you know, I'm looking at this, and it says organic chicken breasts, 8-pack, 6.5 pounds total minimum weight, no antibiotics, steroids, blah 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 blah. $79. Yeah, so I'm just, yeah, I have to go. Would have to go through this, and I'm wondering if my prices.
Yeah, this is not the prices that I found. The prices I found were like it's for restaurant. It was like restaurant supplies, and so the prices were extremely reasonable.
And you were able to. Yeah, find it and see how you ordered
it. Yeah, I was able to order. I went all the way through the whole thing, and I was like, holy crap, we could do this. We could order it right now. So I will find out, and I'll get back with you guys.
This is like $12 a pound.
Yeah.
So that's definitely not a good deal.
No.
But, all right, well, good. Well, let's figure it out and see what's going on. So anyway, we go back to the main topic, which was, I feel like I've got to get buckle down and start doing some of this stuff, getting back into it again. Because I'm telling you, the election's like 80 days off, and it just seems like economically we're not going the right direction and everything else, and I feel like I'm severely lacking. So
yeah. Well, and like I said, that's I did find it, guys, and it's a long link, so I will post it up there. Bubba, I just sent it over to you.
Okay.
And through Skype, but you can see in there. If you go under like refrigerated and frozen items, there's meat and produce, and it is, like I said, fresh meat. I'll just click on our. It was a case meat sales. That's the one where I found it all cheap. So you go under meat and produce, and then click on case meat sales. And scroll all the way to the bottom. It starts at the cheapest prices and works its way up. See, now, here's a prime example. Yesterday, we were looking at a case of chicken quarters, 40-pound average, and it was 69 cents a pound. And today it's 79 cents a pound. So it went up 10 cents a pound overnight.
Yeah, and that's what I was just talking about. All the things that were on there yesterday saying the prices are going up significantly each and every day.
Yep.
You sent me this link, and I think it has already numbers and quantities in there. I wonder if those are the minimum quantities you can order.
I think so. But that's 40 pounds. I mean, if you look at it, it's like 40 pounds of chicken, which is probably one of those big cases, one big flat of chicken. So you would take that, and obviously you don't want the one with the bone in. You do the bone out chicken, which is, if you scroll up there, there's you got drumsticks. Where was it? There was chicken, bone out chicken. Where is it? Here it is. Chicken breast, boneless, skinless. It's $1.57 a pound, and the quantity is 40 pounds. So you add that, so that you're looking at what 40, 60, 80, 40, 60 bucks right there, and you've got 40 pounds of chicken meat. You cut that up, put it in the canning like Jackie Clay talks about, and can your own meat right there on the spot. Bam. Done.
No, that's a great idea. Yeah, $62, and actually, if this is something you don't have to get I'm going to go ahead and run through this. This is great, Colorado. If you don't have to have a business account, then this would be kind of a cool thing to do, because you could once or twice a week you could order a specific product and just can that one product.
Exactly, and that's what our plan is. And so,
I mean, 40 pounds of how long would it take to do 40 pounds of chicken? We'd have to ask your wife.
Yeah, it probably took a Saturday afternoon. Because once you chop it all up and put it into the quart jars, we have to do everything in quart jars because we got 8 people to feed at one meal. So she puts it all in quart jars, and then we also obviously use those Tatler canning lids, and then she just cooks the meat in there, and boom, it's done. Cans it, labels it, puts it on the shelf, and then I'm ready to order for the next week. So, but some of the prices were ridiculously cheap. Look at the pork loin. Pork loin, you get what was it? I'll have to go back and find it again. But it was like $2, and I think it was $2.50 a pound for pork loin. So it's
all right. I'm gonna have to make some phone calls.
Yeah, it was $5 for a leg of lamb. $5 a pound for a leg of lamb. So that's pretty good.
It's $5 for tilapia if you don't have your own tilapia tank.
There you go. So, I mean, it's cheap enough to go ahead and get it. if you can. So I got to figure it out. But I did go ahead and add everything to the cart, and I went all the way to checkout, but I didn't pull the trigger. So it's my understanding that you can order all this stuff. So.
Well, and I'm sure you're right. It's you have to kind of play with all this stuff to kind of find out. But this is a great find. I mean, this might actually even be cheaper than going to our auctions here. We have fruit and vegetable auctions, and sometimes you can get great deals, and sometimes you can't. So I mean, I think it's part of the process.
And my wife went through the prices with me yesterday, and some of the stuff was, you know, really smoking deals, and some of it was just okay deals. So, you know, everything was a decent deal. It was cheaper than actually buying at the grocery store, obviously, but some of it was, like, really good deals, and some of it was just okay.
Right. So. And just so everybody knows, I'm reading it here, there's a $200 minimum on purchase, otherwise, or they do surcharges for the items. So it's... Yeah, you probably want to pay attention to that. All right. Well, you know something? We need to go to commercial break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with our friend David Lee from Maine. And David has an article in this month's Backwoods Home magazine. It's part of a series on building your own place and kind of setting up your homestead. And although the names in there are not his, I believe the story – I think we talked about this once before. It's called Journey to the Backwoods, and this is, I think, part 5. We're also going to talk to him about tools and how to properly prepare if you're going to go ahead and start building your own stuff. So I'm looking forward to talking to David again. It's always an education. And then we'll kind of find out what's going on in his life. And I also kind of curious how things are going up in Maine. I don't think the drought hit them. Are you there?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know if it did. So, sorry, I accidentally hit the mute button with my leg against the. Anyway.
Oh, that's all right. Like I said, getting back into it. All right, yeah. So let's go ahead and take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be live with David Lee.
All right.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey, 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 you're back with Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. And we are on live now with our friend David Lee. Hey, David, you on?
I'm here.
Hey, hey, how are you doing today?
Well, it's good to be back.
Good to be back. So how's the weather up there in Maine?
Oh, it's a little foggy today. We have it really good up here, though. This is a kind of secret place to go and, you know, be a back to the lander kind of thing. And you know, so Maine is a good place.
Yeah, I guess you guys are so close to the coast and everything else. You guys really don't have a big problem with all the droughts and everything. Your big problem would be snowstorms and hurricanes when they come in, right?
Yes, that and ice storms, you know. Yeah, we're right near the ocean here. If I go out the door and trip, I could fall in, you know.
Oh, nice.
That's
why is it every time I talk to him, I want to move?
I know. Of course, the way our luck always runs, the second either you or I would move up there would be like the 500-year storm that would come in.
Oh, no. Well, the only thing we worry about up here is that island out in the Atlantic. If part of it falls in the ocean, we're going to get a tsunami that's 600 feet high.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yes. Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible, actually.
Yeah, I kind of heard something about it. Like this week, like three things happened. It was like opposite poles, too. Like by Auckland, they had like an underwater volcano that erupted also.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well,
so, yeah, it was pretty strange. The same day, they had an underwater volcano erupt in Auckland down in the South Pole that they had like stone that was strewn all over the place, and that's how they figured it was an underwater volcano that it went off. And then that same afternoon, there was a 6-point-something earthquake off of Alaska.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to be watching out the window here because it happens in trees.
Oh, my goodness. So you're up in Maine just off the coast there. What's it like in the winter there? I would imagine it's got to be pretty doggone cold. I'm talking cold to the bone cold.
Oh, no. That's up further. We're pretty lucky here. We picked this zone right along the coast because it's fairly mild. Even the winters aren't that bad. We don't really get winter until like January 1st because the ocean warms up and keeps the air on, well, we're on a peninsula here, keeps it all warm. But you go in 20 miles, then you start getting what you're thinking of Maine as being. And if you go up into the high counties up there, yeah, that's where you get 20, 30 below and winds and all that stuff. We don't go there much. This is the Florida section of Maine here.
Huh.
I know you want to come out here real bad.
I do.
At least we have water.
My dad has retired like 25 years in the military, so I still get that itch to move, and so it's always tempting, and it kills me because I'm always looking at I always look online, I'm always looking at this other stuff. Even though I know I'm staying here, I still look, and then I find something that's super sweet, and then I want to move, and it's like, oh, I can't.
Well, way back when we wanted to move to Maine, we were looking for places to go. I mean, we looked at other states. We thought Arkansas because it's, you know, mountainy and backwoods sort of thing. And we were in Ohio for a while. That was kind of nice. The reason we chose Maine was because we wanted to be kind of out away from any big cities. We wanted to be in a place where there was four definite seasons, but maybe not such a terrible winter, and have plenty of food and fuel available. And here we've got, I mean, the whole ocean. We've got woods up across the state of Maine here, and the population isn't too big. I mean, except in summer when the tourists come, you know.
Oh, my goodness. That is, you're killing me, man. You are killing me. All right. I'm going to have to look good. But I'm going to research a little more. If I was to research your area, what would I look up online? What is your main
Maine coastal real estate, yep. There's plenty of it. Lots of it for sale now, too, because, you know, housing market has really dropped. Or
okay,
call me.
So,
I'll clue you in, you know.
Yeah. All right. I'm going
to tell you the places to go and the places to stay away from.
Interesting. Huh? All right. Let's get back on subject here. Okay. So in this month, in this issue of Backwoods Home Magazine on page 36, we've got part 5. Journey to the Backwoods. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's a story of a semi-fictional person who could be me and how I got to where I am now, mostly. And, you know, that series has gotten me into so much trouble. That one you just read is supposed to be the last one. And I left some kind of hanging mysteries in there. And I'm hearing about it now. They may be forced to have me write some more. I don't know.
So tell us a little bit about it. Just give us a brief synopsis here.
It just tells how, you know, from about the time I graduated from high school and trying to get ahead in the world and, you know, where I learned things and how and all some of the experiences that happened to me. And like you, I like to move every so often, and each one led to building another house and then another house. So that was my means of getting ahead in the world, is build a house, sell it, move on, you know, and all the adventures that go with it, you know. And it's not just the adventures of building houses, it's the people you meet, the things that happened with them, and how the world works. And that's it. I'm gonna have to write a novel. That's how it goes.
So, I mean, I know that some of this is fictitious. You said it's for the fictitional characters, but, I mean, like, in this month you're talking about the baby is born and you're talking about going through the whole process. I mean, is it really your story? I mean,
yes, the stories are real. I've changed the names of people or just not given them names, and I've left a lot of people out and so on. And, but just, you know, the serious stuff, you know, having a baby when you live in the backwoods in a cabin you just built and isn't done yet was a challenge, but we did it.
Wow.
I mean, so 45 miles to get to the hospital.
Oh, no, that was just to get to the midwives.
Oh, to get to the midwives. I misread it.
Yeah. and then you know, they didn't make it happen, so then we had to go another 45 miles to the hospital and have the baby by cesarean section, and, you know. Yeah,
50 hours of labor, too, if I remember right. Holy mackerel.
Well,
wow.
I have to hand it to you. People always talk about going in and doing the prepping, but I don't know if you, when you start going into it, if you really consider all those types. I mean, we moved up to Iowa, and it's an hour to get to, you know, a city that has any real stores or anything really big. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the things that I don't think you really think about because Colorado Rock, you had the same experience when you moved, right?
I did, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I had a little bit of a culture shock. I moved from here to Missouri, out in the Ozarks, and then I realized that there was a lot of things that I was missing that I was used to, and after a while, I realized I just didn't want to miss them anymore, so I moved back to Colorado.
Yeah, culture shock is a big deal here. When we moved to down East Maine, we didn't even understand the language they were speaking, and it took a while to get used to that. And
wow.
and it's so rural that if you go there, you're a person from away, you know, and you stay that way pretty much forever. It's intense.
So let me use that kind of as a segue, not being prepared and everything else. You moved out there. You read this article, your story, and you talk about going out there and building, you know, building your house and doing a lot of this stuff. I mean, basically, your whole thing is you built everything yourself. You took the time
right.
and you went through everything. The Chateau.
Yes.
I love that name. And you know, we were kind of chatting back and forth online and everything else, and you were saying one of the things that you think that homeowners would do well to learn right off the bat is how to map everything out to make everything simpler.
You mean as for building the house or the whole homestead? I mean, you know, when you do any big project, you have to sit down and plan it out first and try to, you know, realize what's ahead of you and how to meet the challenges and so on. I was lucky because I had already built three houses or so and knew that I could go out in the woods where there was no electricity and build something. And I had the tools for it, too. I was ready. So, but it's still a challenge. But, I mean, it's one of those things you look forward to and you get all excited about and you work hard all day and you know, go to bed at night tired and get up in the morning ready to go again. It's a life.
Right. But I think what you were talking about is, you know, homeowners trying to map, as I don't know if it's at the building stage or after the building stage,
mm-hmm.
mapping out everything like their valves and their pipes and everything
okay.
to kind
oh,
of allow.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I know that I'm looking at a project right now, and I would be, until you said that, I would be horrible at that. You don't realize, you have to go back and try to figure everything out because you don't plan it out and map everything out when you're doing it. And it's almost like
yes,
you got to
yes.
reinvent everything again.
Well, that's sort of true. What I did when I mentioned the plumbing part, and in my book, one of the chapters is called Creative Plumbing. And the first thing you should do, and anybody could do this, anybody should do this, whether you live in a home, an apartment, or whatever, there's a whole lot of plumbing in your house. And just as a hobby, just, you know, kind of go around and start seeing where these pipes go and what they do and maybe label them and certainly label all the valves and test the valves to make sure they're all working. Learn where everything in your house goes and what it does. Now, that may sound boring and everything, but it's kind of interesting, you know, and you know, where some pipes run through a closet, you might have to stop, clean the closet out. That isn't bad, you know, and just learn where all the pipes are and then teach your family some of the important things, like where to turn off the main water system. I mean, if something goes wrong in your house, ironically, we just had one last week, a water pipe burst, and you got to know right away where to go to turn off what valve, and of course, go to the electrical box and turn off the water pump or whatever is involved with your plumbing system in an emergency. So just take time, little hobby, map out your plumbing works, know where everything is, and teach your family emergency system. That right there is a really good thing to do no matter what, whether you're going to live there forever, whether you're going to – it's just good knowledge to have. Plus, it can save you a lot of money and time and grief if you have a plumbing emergency.
I mean, would the same be true with – I mean, I guess the same would be true with your electric and any of your utility items when you're building your house or setting up your house?
Oh, sure. There are categories. You know, there's the plumbing, there's the electric, there's the heating and cooling systems, and there's plenty of things to learn about your house. And you should make it interesting. I mean, if you look at it like, oh, God, I can't do that, you know, no, you won't. But if you just start small and, you know, with the plumbing system, find the main shutoff valve first. Everything comes from that. Trace the pipes, see which pipes go to the toilet, which ones go to the sinks, and so on. And after you've learned all this, I mean, it gets better because you can learn to do things like fix a toilet if it's running over or if it needs parts and so on. Then after you've got all that done, then there's some creative things you can do with plumbing that are in my book, which include getting ready for times when the water isn't working or the electricity goes off, or maybe you're going to be off-grid, or, you know, a variety of situations where knowing plumbing and knowing how to do some creative plumbing will make your life a whole lot better and safer.
Now, you mentioned your book. When is your book coming out?
Oh, my gosh. Soon, I hope. This is my first book, and I thought it was going to be easy, you know, because most of the chapters in it are articles I've written for the magazine, and I've just sort of expanded on them. And but it's almost done. We're getting into the very last edit, and then it'll be off to the publishers, and I don't know how long after that.
Okay.
Before Armageddon, I hope it comes out before Armageddon so people can use it.
let's stick with the plumbing topic real quick. So Ron was asking about how the weather is up there and everything else. I mean, does your book cover, like, obviously how you would handle your plumbing and the type of plumbing emergencies that would come up in Maine are different than are going to come up in Arizona, right? I mean, theoretically, you're talking about freezing pipes and all kinds of things that happen there. I mean, do you cover the different sorts of scenarios that you could possibly come into?
Yes, I do. In fact, well, I mean, most every house plumbing system is the same. You know, you might run into different emergencies and so on, but thanks to building codes, most plumbing systems are very much alike. Just learning what to do and where to do it, and then, you know, that's basic. And then you move on. But for instance, like the situations you have out there are not where you've got a drought. You know, one of my things I have in the book is to build in a reservoir system in your house with water in a big tank or a series of tanks, preferably up in the attic, so that when your electricity goes off and you don't have water coming into the house anymore, you can switch over to this reserve system and have gravity-fed water in your house for 2 or 3 or 4 days before you run out.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
That's
here
a great
in Maine,
idea.
We have ice storms in the winter, which takes down power lines, and sometimes it takes days to get the electricity back on. So having your water system still working, I mean, it's lower pressure because it's gravity-fed, but it's still there, and you still have access to the hot water that's in your hot water tank. In other words, your whole system still works in an emergency. And if the emergency, say, goes on, you know, like for a week or two, you can take a generator, hook it up to just the well pump, and fill your reservoir again.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I was living off. Yeah, when I was living off-grid, I built a system like that in the chateau there and used nothing but water off the roof. Sometimes I'd pump some water into the reservoirs from a spring down the road. But, you know, if you're frugal with water, rainwater will last, well, here in Maine, I don't know about Arizona, but, but you can keep those reservoirs full and have your water and, you know, be safer in hard times, you know, if you have to live off the grid or perhaps, you know, if the grid leaves you, you know, having a system like that could be very helpful.
Well, here's a question for you. I have a quick question. Now, living in a home that you didn't build, you know, let's say a normal residential home, the first thing that I think of is putting that much weight in the rafters would cause a problem.
It could if you just hung it up there in the rafters. In my book, I tell where to put it. You know, it should be over a load-bearing wall. You can spread out the weight, too. I don't recommend using one big tank. I recommend using, like, 55-gallon food-grade drums and as many of those as you can fit up there. That way you can spread the weight around.
Nice.
And
okay.
If it's in your attic, it probably won't freeze. But if it is going to freeze, you can build a fairly simple, say, 2-inch-thick styrofoam box around your water to keep the temperature from going down in there. A variety of ways to do that sort of thing. But then, I mean, having a secure water system, I mean, how good is that if things get tough?
Yeah. I'm all about that. I love that idea. I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. So what are some of the basic tools that you need if things get tough? And okay, so I want to learn about all this plumbing and things, you know, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for your book to come out. What are some of the tools I can go get now so that I'm ready for when your book
comes out? Well, as you learn the plumbing system, you'll see things you'll need. You know, an adjustable wrench is good. There'll be various tools all along. I mean, God, plumbing tools, there's thousands of them. But as you learn the system, you'll see a tool you might need. For instance, if you had to change a faucet, you're going to need a couple of different wrenches. And also along the way is learning where and what parts you need. You know, and you go to the plumbing store, you know, which, you know, have you got copper plumbing? Have you got PVC plumbing? That sort of thing. So you learn not only what tools to buy, but what parts to buy and have on hand. You know, it's important to be able to get right in there and fix things quick if you can. So as part of your hobby, you buy the tools, you buy some equipment, you learn some skills. It's a good idea to learn soldering. I mean, see, this can lead to a whole life. You could become a plumber.
Just what I need, another hobby.
Well, in a way, this is true. I mean, think of it. You know, most people, if you have any kind of plumbing problem, the toilet's leaking a little, your leaky faucet, you call the plumber. And most of their work is stuff that people could do themselves in their own home and enjoy it and feel that sense of accomplishment when you fix it yourself.
Now, I have a question. You know, it's kind of interesting because at least here in Iowa, they're making it more and more difficult for you to go buy certain things. Like, I can go buy a water heater, but I'm not allowed to install a water heater in my own house.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Go ahead.
Well, here in Maine, I wanted to buy a furnace for my house, and they wouldn't sell me one because I'm not a licensed installer.
Right.
How about that? Yeah. And it's more. I just heard something last week that out west somewhere, a man was collecting rainwater off his roof, and he was violating a regulation because that water was supposed to belong to the state. You know, it's
that was probably Colorado.
Could have been.
Yeah,
Colorado's got the same situation. But I mean, do you recommend? I guess I have a couple questions. Like, so in an older house, you talked about copper and everything else. It seems like every year there's a different article or something coming out saying it's better to do PVC, it's better to do this, it's better to do that, and it's kind of hard to keep up. And when that new trend comes in, it's harder and harder to find the older pieces. I mean, do you recommend if you're building your own house and everything else, you store, is there certain things that you should store up on, because in case they become obsolete. I know, because we live in an old house that was built at the turn of the century, and we had a pipe froze this last winter and busted, and I actually had to replace the entire section of pipe because they don't make it in that diameter anymore, and so I had to go and go back and redo, refind a new head and kind of redo this stuff, and I was thinking, man, if I replace anything, I almost should buy extra pieces.
Well, yes and no. Most of the problem with that I found over the years for plumbing, for me anyway, was that the fixtures change. You know, the faucets will change, and they won't accept the fittings from your regular plumbing stock. You know, so there was always that. I think for the general run of pipes and things through your house, I go with PVC. Copper's pretty, but it's expensive. People are stealing it lately. It's very difficult to work with, and you got to be really good at soldering to make sure you get, watertight seals. And oftentimes, you're soldering right next to something that's flammable. That ain't good. So I prefer PVC.
Okay, and I think that's what you mentioned was what I ran into, which was it was the fitting, it was the actual faucets that I couldn't get to match up, and I had to replace the whole thing.
Yeah, they ought to make a law against that.
they ought to put in the building codes
that all these things have to be the same so that they can be interchangeable, but of course they won't do that.
No, I'm sure they won't. That would make it too. That would make it too easy on everybody.
Yes, and a lot less expensive.
And a lot less expensive. So when you're talking about like these emergency systems and things like that, mm-hmm. you know, does the book cover? I mean, we're just talking about plumbing. Does it cover multiple areas? So is like I said, is there like a whole set of things that you have inside the book that talks about things that you should do for electricity and things you should do for just you know other environments within the house building system?
Oh, certainly. Well, it's 10 chapters. In fact, let me call it up here, and I'll show you. Well, my chapter 8 is creative plumbing. But chapter 1 is, come on here, there, is called Armor Plating Your Home. This is, you've seen some of the pictures of my houses?
I have, yes.
And yes, those shakes on the outside of the house are hard wood. There's about 4 or 5 inches, they're about 4 or 5 inches worth of armor plating on your house, which is actually bulletproof. That's one. And then roofing. I've got a whole chapter on roofing, a different way to do roofing that works better, works on kind of unusual homes better, like you have a yurt that you want to roof or a geodesic dome or whatever. Chapter 3, reasons to have a tower on your house.
A tower like a...
Tower.
What? Really?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have to know what would be the reason for having a tower on your house, other than it would just be really cool.
Oh, it's really cool. All right. Well, if you add a tower onto your house, you've added at least 3, maybe 4 rooms to your house. And I don't like huge towers. My basic tower would be 8 feet by 8 feet by about 34 feet tall. And what this does on the first floor of it, you could have an entryway. It could be a closet. It could be part of your kitchen. It could be a room for just about anything. On the second floor, it could be a dressing room or another bathroom or there's dozens of uses for little rooms. And then on the third floor, you can put in this water system I'm talking about. You get like 6 or 8 55-gallon drums up there, and having it up in the tower gives you a little better pressure from gravity feed. And then up on the top, some of my towers I put roofs on, so that there's a room at the top of the tower that you can go up into. Some of them I leave open and just put a railing around it so you can go up there and, you know, look at the stars. But it's also a good place to put your antennas and various things that you have to get to every once in a while that need maintenance.
Oh, that's a good point.
Sure. And plus you can look out over and, you know, feel superior to all your neighbors because you're looking down on them.
So... structurally, is that difficult to build? I mean, it would seem like it isn't, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's just...
Well, I've tried to put subjects in the book that go from easy to very difficult. That's one of the two most difficult, because it is. It's like building a whole building. It's basically boxes stacked on top of each other is the way to do it. And mine, I put my shakes on the outside of them, and they're very tough, and they're heated, and... the tower rooms are heated and so on, so they're really useful. Yeah, that's a pretty involved one. But the next one, Chapter 4, what I call creative solar magic, is making solar collectors for the windows on the south side of your house that not only collect heat but give you privacy. You won't need curtains or shades anymore, and they're artworks. That's pretty easy to do. Oh, and then there's the forever floor. That's a good one.
Forever floor?
The forever floor. Yes, it'll last forever.
Okay, now I gotta know this because I'm getting ready. My floors are horrible.
Okay, what do you got for floors there? Old floorboards or what?
Yeah, they're inside. It's floorboard over joists that go right over the basement, so you can see down. Yeah, you know, the shrinkage, you can see down into the basement. And then obviously the decks are, yeah, well, I'm not kidding. I can tell if my wife's downstairs doing laundry because I can look between the beams and see her walking around.
Oh, okay. Well,
the secret to the forever floor is this. You take roll roofing, 90-pound roll roofing. That's mineral surface rolled roofing, you know. And you cement it to the floor with the same stuff that the factories use. You know, they do their roofs in roll roofing with a cement to hold it down. You do the same thing in your house. I mean, you'd be a little more delicate and accurate about it, but you get that down, and then you paint it with latex paint. Okay? So, floor is down. It's waterproof, of course, because it's roofing. You paint it with the latex paint, and that locks all those little granules into place and puts a surface on the floor that takes all the wear. As the latex starts to wear down and you start to see granules showing through, you slap another coat of paint on it. Now, this is another good thing about this, too. Your floor can be any color, any pattern, anything you want, because you do it yourself. I mean, I'm partial to what looks like cobblestones or whatever on one. I paint them in place. But you could paint anything down there. You could paint a rug on the floor. You could have it all one color. You could whatever you like. And if you get tired of that, just paint it again. And if you keep doing that, the floor will last forever. And this is something you can do outside, too. I mean, the floors of my tower tops, and when I do balconies and so on, I put the forever floor out there.
Wow, that's very creative.
Huh? Okay, here's something more creative. Chapter 6 is hinges.
Hinges, okay.
Hinges. I recommend every hinge in your house you make yourself, and you make them out of wood, and they're hand-carved. You can make them for any size door. You can make hinges that are strong enough to be garage doors, bank vault doors, whatever you need, and all the way down to windows and vents and the whole thing, and they're beautiful.
Out of wood?
Out of wood, and it's pine wood.
What? The pine's soft.
Well, not that soft, you know. It's pretty good stuff.
So you're,
but
you're
imagine
saying
a hinge.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, yeah.
I was just going to say, so you're saying that a wood hinge would be strong enough to support a door or a vault door?
Easily. Now, these are not small hinges. They're not dainty. For instance, my garage door, the hinges are 48 inches long. They're made of 2-inch by 2-inch pine. And the hinge pin is a 12-inch long pole barn spike. And the reason these are so much stronger is because the hinges are much bigger. There's a lot more contact area between the hinges and the door and the house itself. And they're all put together with screws, and they're big, so they're really hard. You could almost drive a car into one and it wouldn't stop them. Where metal hinges, when you look at a metal hinge, like a butt hinge for a door, there's six little screws. That's all that's holding the door and the hinge together. And those tend to loosen up as the door gets used over the years. And if somebody goes to break down the door, that's where it comes apart. You know, the hinge just pulls right out of the wall or the door, and the door goes down and the police come running. Oh, no, we're not going there today. So these hinges they're creative, but they will make your home stronger. If you're fortifying your house for the future, these are the way to go. And you make them yourself, and they don't cost a lot. In fact, the first thing I tell people in this is it takes less time and less money to make a set of these for a door than it does to go to town and buy a set of metal hinges and bring them back and put them on. And that's the truth.
Really?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Do you have to use kiln-dried wood? Because it would seem like...
Oh, heck no.
I mean...
Nah.
Really?
I just buy plywood. I buy pine, you know, all I ever buy is number 4 pine. I just buy a whole pile of it because in that pile of boards is a whole lot of it that's just clear grained and straight, and I tend to use that for my hinges. Although you don't have to. Your knots on them look nice too.
Oh, my goodness. I got to see that.
I know. I'm like, want to see photographs of this, and I want an advanced copy of this book.
I know.
You know, go to Backwoods Home, and in the search window there, do David Lee, and some of my old articles are in there, and there's pictures. And I have a blog there, too, that you can look up to. There's lots of pictures in there, some of the projects I've done, and I'm sure the hinges and the forever floor. Oh, the forever floor is in there. That tells how to do the whole thing. And
I think it's time for a road trip, Bubba.
All right.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, out of curiosity, how did you come up with this? I mean, I would never think, and obviously I'm not a contractor or, you know, have any real experience. I'm not a cabinet maker or things like that. What would make you try putting together everything with wooden hinges and think that they would actually work?
When I got out of high school, I was too poor to go to college, but I managed to qualify for a machinist apprentice program in Connecticut with United Aircraft. And in that program, it's 3 years long, and you learn everything about materials, you know, their strengths, their weaknesses. I mean, mostly it deals with metal, but not always. And you learn how things work, how threads work, how to make threads, all these little technical things that you don't really learn if you come into carpentry or building from just building. You know, I came into it from being a machinist, so that gave me a lot of ideas, about, especially the hinges. I mean, when they're built, they have to be very accurate so that the hinge pins all align up with each other and everything, and they have to be square on the door and square on the frame and all that stuff. So it's kind of fussy work, but it opened up a whole new way to design things.
Wow, that's amazing. And the same thing with the floor. I mean, I guess, you know, if you really think about it, there's probably a lot of uses for a lot of things that are out there. But,
oh, sure.
You know, this
well,
is
one
pretty
of, one
creative
of my things
stuff.
That I, yeah, what I tell people is I do common things with uncommon materials what's the other end of that would be? I can't figure it out right now. But anyway, yeah, I do things in an unusual way, and I use materials in unusual ways. And I lay awake at night thinking of this stuff. I mean, I can't help it. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, it's definitely good stuff. I mean, armor plating your house with your shingles and making wood. I guess the only thing that would really worry me is, you know, someone coming up with a little bit of gasoline and a match.
Oh well, there's less. These are slightly less vulnerable to fire than, say, cedar shakes. I mean, those almost light up by themselves. And when you think of other things like vinyl siding, this is a much better siding on your house. There's no question about it. Some of these things like the armor plating your home, this could become a business. I mean, you do your house and somebody likes it and say, oh, come and do my house, you know. You can make a lot of money with it.
Now, when you say armor plating, obviously, mm-hmm. Have you tested it?
Oh, I have tested it thoroughly.
That's awesome.
I've had an old lady run into it with a Buick. That didn't stop it. I took some pieces out and nailed them to a stump and shot at them just to see what they'd do. They work.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. Now, how long have you been up there in Maine?
I was born here. Then I moved away for a few years and then kind of went around the country. Moved back here about 16 years ago.
Wow.
This is home to us now. We've been a lot of places. This is the best for us.
Man, you're making it so stinking tempting to look. All right.
Well, what are you waiting for?
I know. Well, you know, our
they give
next
you a travel allowance,
don't Hickory,
they?
North Carolina. Yeah. Our next expo is in Hickory, North Carolina, and I may just have to make a road trip after that and just zip
sure.
up there.
Yeah.
The one question I did have for you is, you mentioned, and this has got me thinking here because I would like a water reserve myself. And you mentioned gravity-fed water, but how do you do that in a home is hooked to in a neighborhood hooked to the water system? Because aren't those pipes down in the basement that come into the house?
They are. You know, if you're on a regular water system that's already under pressure, you pump those tanks full up there, and then just have a valve you turn off. So if your water supply stops, you go down and you turn off your main water supply and you turn on your reserve.
I mean,
if you're on a regular water supply, every once in a while, don't you have to stop using your water and boil it and all that because something goes wrong in the system?
Well, you hear about those things, yes. I've never had to have that situation, but you hear about those, and I don't want that to ever happen here. So, yes, I definitely want something.
Well, this gets you through that, but there's another advantage to having these tanks up in your attic or up in your tower, and that is you can treat your own water. For instance, we're on a well, but we have iron in our water, and we also have radon.
Oh, yeah.
And by putting the water up there in those tanks, that lets them air out. You know, the radon rises out of the water up there in the tanks in the attic rather than out your faucet every time you turn it on. And also, if there's something wrong with the water, you can go up there and do something with it. For instance, if it's starting to get a little bacteria or whatever in it, you can go up there and pour some Clorox in it or some other kind of disinfectant and clean your water up. You can inspect your water. That's pretty hard to do with a regular plumbing system.
Yeah.
So there's big advantages to it. I guess you'll have to buy my book.
I know. When is this? Come on. I want it.
Well, you just tell them over at Backwoods Home that it's on its way and to hurry and get it out there.
That's probably the problem right there because they're so busy out there doing their apple seed shoot that they can't get the book finished.
Oh, no. This is not their fault. I just haven't gotten it to them yet. But I think it's going to be going out this week. They'll have it and whatever the publishing process takes. But there's more. I mean, we got the creative plumbing, but I also have two chapters. One of them is on heat. It's how to build a masonry mass heating system that will take half the wood that you burn now and heat your house better. And then there's another chapter on special chimneys that are heat storage systems and have no creosote in them.
Okay. So
keep your home warm in winter, cool in summer.
You're saying the chimney itself actually stores heat?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. You have a wood stove. You burn wood in it. The heat comes through the stove out into the room and so on. But it's like 60% of the heat goes up the chimney with the smoke.
Correct.
Right.
And mostly, you after the stove, there's a little bit of stovepipe, and then it goes into something that takes it out of the house. And that something is one kind of chimney or another that is insulated in such a way that all the heat and smoke that's in it goes right up and out to God's feet, you know. And by having a chimney that, say, runs the full height of your house, and this is going to be anywhere from 24 to 36 feet, if you built that of masonry and a lot of it, for instance, our chimney here weighs 47 tons, and if we have a fire in our furnace for a day, we have heat in the house for a week because the chimney extracts the heat out of the smoke and heat and stores it in this big masonry mass. And then after the fire has gone out, I put a shut off on the top of the chimney, so you shut that when the fire is out, and then you're not losing any more heat going up the chimney and drafting out.
Okay, I got to go back to your chimney weighs 47 tons.
Yep. Well, it's, you know, it's not just the chimney. I build them with things in them, like a little fireplace here and a big mass here, and I've built some with a shower stall built into the stonework. How's that?
Wow. I think that's an Abrams tank.
Oh, it's better than that. Abrams tanks eventually fall apart. This probably won't.
All right. So I have to ask a quick question.
Sure.
You know, all this is great stuff. David, being able to, you know, keep the extra heat inside your house. I mean, because we burn wood. I don't think Colorado. You don't burn wood, do you, Colorado?
Oh yeah.
Or do you?
Yep.
But how feasible is this to someone like Colorado Ron or I, where we both live in town? Yeah, I mean, this obviously some of this would work if I was going in and building a brand new place or you know, living off-grid where I probably won't have all the code issues And even if I did, most people aren't going to come out there and see it. I mean, but is like building a chimney like that really something you can get that you can get through with codes, with current codes?
Oh, no. Of course not.
Okay.
Although, now, here's the thing. If you build the code, they have this diagram they show you that how this chimney should be built. And mine are built the same way, except much more. For instance, they all start out with flue tiles. And in my case, 8x8x2 foot flue tiles. That's what the smoke and heat actually go up through. And then wrapped around those are chimney building blocks. Okay? That's your basic chimney. Those are the ones you see on the outside of the house, those gray, you know, 16-inch by 16-inch things sticking up in the air there.
Right.
Then sometimes, you know, you see elaborate fireplaces and so on. They'll wrap stone around that or brick or something. And usually it's on the outside of the house and it's gorgeous, but God, what a disaster. But it's the code. My chimneys, I insist on having inside the house, all of them right to the very top, so that you aren't losing heat. You know, any chimney that sticks through a roof, that part that's sticking out through the roof, is the best air conditioner you could have, even in the winter, because it gets cold, it wicks the heat right up out of the house and out into the air, plus causes creosote. Oh, we're getting carried away here into details, but the chimney is solid, works well, creates no creosote, saves your heat, cuts your wood in half, all that stuff. When you had your question, though, this brought up something, a problem I always have, is people hear these things just like we're doing today, and they think, I don't believe that. And then they don't follow it up, you know. I've even had people come here and visit, and I'll explain something, you know, like how the shakes work or the roofing works or something. And they just I don't know, think they were in Disneyland and have gone home after or something. I don't know.
Well, I think that we're all so hit with everything on TV and everything else that talks
sure.
about how you have to do things this specific way. I mean,
yep.
honestly, I think if it was 100 years ago and someone was saying, oh, you could, you know, you could make your hinges out of wood, people going, mm-hmm. well, of course you could, stupid. But,
yeah.
you know, but here I'm thinking, well, no, there's no way you're going to hang a door that you use on a regular basis that weighs, what, 60 pounds maybe or something like that if it's a big front door mm-hmm. or a garage door, and mm-hmm. be able to do that with wood hinges. I mean, I have to admit, I was doing.
You'll
the
believe
same
it
thing
when you see the hinges, it. Though. You'll believe it when you see the hinges. Don't worry.
Okay, and the same thing with the chimney. I guess you know you're kind of rediscovering things that people probably did in the past. I mean, I guess I was thinking about it as you were saying that in those you know when I was younger. You know, you'd go to different places, you'd see these massive, massive cabins, and they'd have these hearths, you know, with real, it was really elaborate, big masonry,
mm-hmm.
and there's obviously a reason they would do that, and usually each level might have a opening, you know, for letting heat inside there, and, mm-hmm. you know, why would you do that if it just wasted? I always thought, well, that's just kind of dumb, but looks pretty.
But you have to understand, you know, 100 years ago, they didn't have the nice cement we have now, and they didn't have flue tiles and so on. Mostly what they did then was piled up rocks with mud in between it, and it had to be rebuilt every so often. And true, and they did the same thing. I mean, that big mass would hold heat for a long time, and so that aspect was worked back then and still works now. But the beauty now is we have all these modern building materials and this very much better cement and mortar. And I just make use of that along with what I know about the materials. You know, masonry or stone or brick or any of that stuff can hold an incredible amount of heat at a temperature
right.
let's radiate out into your house at about room temperature. It's really amazing. I mean, here, this house is big. We got like 3,600 square feet, and we use 4 cords of wood all winter.
Wow.
Really?
Really. Sometimes
yeah, you're over there chopping
winter.
Wood there, Bubba. You might want to reconsider.
Oh, well, here's more.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Part of my one about stoves is that the furnaces that I build will take a 5-foot log if you're big enough to throw them in there. So that shuts off a lot of the work you have to do cutting your stove your wood stove wood up into little 16-inch pieces. You know, I hate that.
Yes, me too.
So
that's the one thing I hate the most.
You actually build your own furnaces?
Sure. I use and two different.
Go ahead.
Well, I use 55-gallon drums. You've seen 55-gallon
yep.
drum stoves, I'm sure, kits and so on. That's
right.
The simplest way to do it, and those work really well. But I go one bigger. I use the 250-gallon oil tanks for a furnace.
Oh, yeah.
They're easy to get. They're easy to work. I've changed mine like 3 times, not because it wore out, but because I get an idea how I want to change it and make it better. You know, so I haul the thing out of there and take it to the dump and then pick up another one while I'm there and come back and build it in.
And are these furnaces in your, like, basement, or do you have these outside, or how do you operate them?
Oh, no. Well, our base, we have a full basement here, so the big furnace is built down into the basement, and a lot of the mass is built around that down there. That's built of concrete blocks that are filled with sand. And then once it reaches the first floor living quarters, then I did stonework, and it's very pretty, but it's still big. And then up on the second floor, it narrows down quite a lot, but still pretty big chimney. It's about 3 feet by 4 feet. And then where it goes out through the roof, I box around the chimney and insulate that, so that the only part of the whole chimney that's exposed to the outdoors is the very top surface.
Wow.
When you come for a visit,
you're right.
Your whole tour, we'll go up on the roof, we'll start there and work down, or start in the basement, work up, whatever.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling road trip Colorado.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So you know, you said there's 10 chapters. So we got about 5 minutes left before we have to go here. But yeah, give me since Colorado and I live in town, and probably a majority of our listeners do too, give us one creative thing that's inside your book that just anybody could do in town to really kind of improve, you know, their home.
Well, if you're going to improve it, say hard times come and instead of bugging out, you decide to bug in, okay? And you're going to make your home into something that keeps you safe, keeps you warm, and that you can defend. Any number of them here. I think if you're in town, probably the most efficient one to start would be creative solar magic. It's a nice, easy thing. It gives you, you know, people can't look in your windows, but you're getting solar heat from them. After that might be, I have one on windows and vents. If you could change your windows and vents over to the way I do it, you'd have a much easier house to heat.
Are the windows you're talking, how you do it, is it something that you buy commercially or is it something that you make?
Well, I buy the glass commercially. I like to use, double paned tempered glass that's, they call it thermal pane or whatever, has a gap between the glass. And then I make my own frames, and that's only half of it. I mean, there's the windows, but the vents are the other half. The vents are actually like little doors in the wall. They're real solid. You open them up and they're screened. You close them and they have, you know, stained glass in them and my fancy hinges and so on. So they're pretty to look at. But they're also burglar proof. And let's see, what else? The creative plumbing part. That's, I think anyone who lives in any house should do that. You know, just go through and learn stuff about your house. And that could be extended out into your electrical system too. And make sure your family is familiar with what to do in an emergency on either one of those systems.
Okay.
Then later
Very
on you
cool.
can go into, then you can armor plate your house and put a tower and change the roof and, and the floors and the hinges and the chimneys.
I think I'll let Colorado Ron do that and I'll just admire from afar. I don't think my neighbors would necessarily appreciate it in my neighborhood.
what kind of neighborhood do you have? You have houses right close by or what?
We live in town. I have houses on both sides of me. So unfortunately,
if you put the armor plating on your house, they'd probably freak out, right?
Probably. I think,
or if you did one of my roofs, I know they would freak out.
Exactly. I don't want to be people start calling us the gingerbread house or something.
Those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I appreciate you coming on, David. I can't wait for your book to come out. I'm actually going to have to give Dave Duffy a call and find out how long the print time is, because this sounds like it's a great source of information all the way around. I mean, there's some really creative things that you guys have talked about already. How big is the book?
Oh,
how many pages?
I hope so. Well, I don't know yet. It's 10 chapters. It's, 70,000 words and a whole bunch of pictures and so on. I've been looking in Backwoods Home about other books they have for sale here, too. And my theory is that, you know, there are all these other books, pole building and all these various aspects of building. And if somebody is thinking of building their house, they're going to start building up a library of books to help them along, and they're absolutely going to need mine.
I would definitely agree. Colorado and I, Ron and I, have been looking up some of your older articles, and we found the one on the wood stove that was from November, December 2004, Colorado. Ron just sent it to me. And I'm looking at that, and it's like, that looks so simple.
Yep.
It is. Yep.
That's what I like. I like simple.
Yep. Well, all of my projects, I mean, every project I've ever done is I've intended it to be for people to do it themselves, you know, the owner-builder. Now, granted, some of them are complicated more than others, but anyone could do this who has any kind of knack at all for using tools and building things.
Okay, one last question before you go. I know we're right over time, but in this economy where houses seem to be, you know, going up against foreclosure constantly, if I was to move and restart, for instance, or somebody out there was to move and restart, would you still recommend building from scratch, or would you recommend, buying a repo of some sort?
It isn't in this book because I haven't told all my secrets. I have a system for rebuilding an old house or any house to turn it into something that's efficient, safer, the whole thing. You know, so you have a choice. I prefer building from scratch because you don't find any dust in the walls and, you know, skeletons and so on, and it's all clean lumber. So I like from the ground up, but everybody can't do that. And sometimes, and my gosh, I mean, they're giving houses away now. So if you could move into one and just spend your money just, you know, upgrading and reinforcing this thing, that's one way to go. So either way, I'd say, you know, if you're going to move, look into each way.
Okay.
I just want to throw out, I guess it would also depend, because you're in an area that you guys do a lot of logging. I mean, Maine is a – Maine, Vermont, those are areas – I mean, Washington, Oregon. You know, you guys have, I would guess, access to a lot of inexpensive, you know, wood, where, you know, some – like Arizona, I know the wood prices are astronomically high, just because everything has to be shipped in.
Well, it's like that here too. I mean, here in Maine, most of the logs that are cut are just right out of state to New Jersey and turned into plywood. You know, you can buy logs if you want to, but most of the trees up here are crooked. So, no, I don't think we have much of an advantage here just because we have a lot of lumber or a lot of logs. Besides, we're on the coast here. All we're into is lobsters and.
That's it.
What have I done?
I'm in now. I'm all in. Lobster. Oh.
Yes, and it's down to $2 a pound here.
Oh, gosh.
Wow, really? Why so
right.
cheap?
Hold me back, Bubba. Hold me back.
Well, the economy's bad. You know, we're not getting as many tourists up here to eat them, and that's the way it is. And our fishermen are very efficient.
All right, so if we were going to plan a road trip, what's the nearest big town to you?
Big town?
Well, the nearest town. Where's the nearest town so that we can kind of plan this out? What's the nearest town?
Oh, well, Google up East Booth Bay, Maine.
East
That's where we
East
live.
Bay.
Mm-hmm. All right. East All right. Bay. So.
And you got my phone number.
Yeah,
yep.
Well, don't be surprised if we start knocking on the door at $2 a pound for lobster.
Oh, man, we're always in for good food.
Yeah. All right, Dave. All right, thank you very much for coming on, and we look forward to getting a copy of this book here as soon as we can get Dave Duffy to get it out.
Okay, will do.
All right, guys.
Good to talk to you.
You too. We've been talking live with David Lee from Backwoods Home, contributor to Backwoods Home Magazine and author of a new book coming out on how to customize your home and all kinds of tricks and things you can do. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll get ready to wrap this puppy up. So we'll be back after this commercial.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going and what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the Freeze Dry Guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. We were just talking to David Lee, and I think the thing that stuck most into our heads is lobster, $2 a pound.
$2 a pound. We're hitting the road.
I can't even imagine $2 a pound for lobster. That's just... It's amazing how the economy hits things, isn't it? It's like, beef prices are up, everything else, but you can buy a lobster for $2 a pound.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's cheaper than the pork loin you were just talking about.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Oh, my goodness. That is so delicious. That's, man, that's worth the trip to me right there, hands down. Yeah. It's cheaper than the hamburger.
I have to say, I mean, I really want to get a hold of this book. I mean, some of the things that he's talking about are pretty creative. And I think some of them sound, I mean, like it, oh God, I can't even speak. The thought of heating a 3,000 plus square foot building for with less of four cords of wood
Four cords of wood, 3,000 square foot home with four cords of wood for the winter. That's what he uses, he says.
And I know he says the winters aren't harsh there, but I have to assume that the winters are more harsh in Maine than they are either here in Iowa or Colorado, just because of the – you're so close to the coast, the wetness, you know, the
right.
humidity would tend to seep into buildings.
Yeah, well, that's what I would think, too. I mean, it's got to be, you know, I mean, that's a perfect spot for moss and mold and, you know, all that stuff. Same as, like, on the West Coast, you know, everything is kind of moldy and the wood is. And that would surprise me. I'd love to see – I honestly think that's worth a stinking trip up there. And I looked up where he's from up there, and there's no easy access to it, though. That's one thing. I mean, you've got to drive all around because it's right on the coastal part, so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of waterways in and out, and I mean, yeah, first big wave and that place is <he's> swimming.
Yeah, no kidding. I can't. You know, obviously he's, you know, he's built himself. What is it called? The Chateau. And it's a beautiful building, guys. I mean, he's done an amazing job. If you get Backwoods Home Magazine, like I said, the picture of it is on page 37. And it's really kind of cool looking. And he's got his tower there and everything else. And, you know, building all that from scratch. And then still being as efficient as he's talking about. I mean, that's just amazing. I think it's a very cool thing to do. The problem is that I'm not handy. I'd have to quadruple the price of whatever we were talking about because I'd have to hire Dave or someone that David would recommend to come in here and actually do all this.
I hear you.
But,
It's tough. It would be worth it though to go up and spend a week or two just learning some of those skills. The problem that I'm having, or a problem I could see, is being able to use some of those skills, like you said, in a neighborhood situation. You know,
right?
What
well,
good
you
is going up there? And, yeah. I mean, what good is learning how to build a 47-ton fireplace if we can't do it in our neighborhood?
Right. Well, I mean, I noticed on your photographs you've been doing some stuff in your backyard. You've done some raised beds and things like that. And and you're in a worse situation than I am because you live in a I don't know. Are you in an homeowners association
HOA
situation?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
HOA covenant controlled type area. Yeah.
And see, I'm not. I used to be in Texas. And, you know, people that have two-story houses can see into your backyard and they'll report you for having chickens or, you know, whatever it is. And I've read a lot of people on the forums with similar problems. And I know you've had problems where you have to watch exactly what you're doing because the association watches. And I'm not in that bad of a situation, because there's no homeowners associations out here where we are. But, the town and the county are still watching for building codes, and as much as I think some of that stuff would be really cool, I'm not sure how much of it would fly. And I know that's one of the things that David talks about all the time is all the regulations that are coming into effect, which is why, you know, he's a big fan of, you know, building not necessarily off-grid but out of your main city areas and things like that.
I agree. That's the one big frustration here. But at the same time, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I like it, but at the same time, it also keeps me from trashing my place. My wife getting mad at me and giving me that look because I get halfway through a project, and it's easier to just leave it and come back to it tomorrow when I'm living out in the country. And here I put everything away, put all my tools away, clean it up. And or I just push through and get the job done so that I don't have to pull everything back out again. So, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's nice to be able to keep everything neat and clean, but I don't like not having that option. You know what I mean? So,
well, especially things with you, and it's not that bad here in Iowa yet, but, you know, with you not being able to collect rainwater, for example.
That's a huge thing for me. Yeah.
I mean, you know, when, you know, you can only put so many, you know, 5,000-gallon tanks in your basement, and you know, there's only so many ways that you can store water efficiently for long-term use. And I, you know, I never really thought of some of the points that David made. I mean, that was a great point with his gravity-fed water system. It's like, okay, when the power goes out and everything else, how do you continue to use your water? Well, you know, gravity-fed is a smart way to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're in town. You know, so with him, he can go ahead and hit a generator and backfill from a well. You know, how do you, you know, if you can't collect rainwater or you don't have another way to store it, how can you refill?
Collecting rainwater and telling them to kiss off.
Yeah, I know. And then I think that's probably where a lot of people are going to go. But,
right.
You know, it obviously gets more difficult.
Yeah, you're right. And in order to do it legally or do things legally, I really like his idea of the barrels up in the attic and storing it. You know, obviously my first concern was the weight load, and the second concern would be leakage. You know, those are the two things that I would be worried about. But, you know, only because I second-guess my plumbing skills, so I'd be worried about some pipe that I didn't seal correctly start leaking and dripping, and then I got big stains in my ceiling, and my wife is giving me that look.
No, my issue would be the squirrel that gets up into the attic and decides that it wants to chew through the plastic food grade barrel. And
yeah.
Yes, and then a leak springs out and I've got, you know, water all over the place. Yeah, so It would be like one of those National Lampoon Vacation movies. So.
Oh man. So yeah, you just never know. But you know, I like I love his ideas. I really want to see a picture of these wood hinges. So I'm gonna have to start researching that and finding a wood hinge picture, because that's very interesting to me.
I did find one on Backwoods Home. It was for a gate that he had done. And it was two blocks of wood, looked like cut 2x4s with a pin going through it, holding up the entire fence gate. And
okay.
So I did manage to find one. I've got to see these things. I mean, the fact that he says that you can use a wood hinge to hold up something as heavy as a vault door amazes me.
Yeah, no kidding. On another note, before we jump into anything else here, what was that segment we were going to call? Homestead Hunter?
Homestead Hunter, right. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I came up with a new idea this week.
Okay.
It's a brilliant idea. Brilliant
all
idea.
Right.
All
Let's
right.
hear it.
You ready? Okay.
Yeah.
How do I word this? I'm too excited. All right. Some of the toughest buildings that were ever built in North America are old schools. Am I right?
Yeah, they were mostly meant, they were built to be fallout shelters or bomb shelters also.
Exactly, exactly. Or in an emergency, they were also built to be military points, temporary military installations. So I started researching, started looking up schools. Did you know that in Detroit, of course, Detroit's probably the worst place to look, but did you know in Detroit there's over 80 buildings that they're selling?
School buildings?
School buildings. And I started looking at building. I did research. There's one in Fort Scott, this one was really exciting. Fort Scott, Kansas.
Okay.
All right.
How could you forget that name?
I know.
Anyway, go on. Fort Scott, Kansas.
All right. Yeah, Fort Scott, Kansas. There was a school there that was built back in early 1900s, and it is 40,000 square feet. Okay. Now I'm going to post this link up because, unfortunately, this building just sold, but this is just to give you an idea. Bubba, it's on its way to you right now. Now look at this thing. This thing is a freaking castle. It's got a gymnasium. It's got an auditorium. It's got classrooms, cafeteria, library. It's got the whole nine yards. It's built out of granite and brick. And it was on, I think, just over an acre. I think this one was on, 1.10 acres. $55,000.
Yeah, well, I can tell you the reason why that they're so inexpensive is because the cost of the asbestos removal is in the, you know, tens if not $100,000.
This one has no asbestos.
If it isn't, then it would be a steal. But yeah, a lot of the old schools and everything else, the inside, the lead and the paint, it's the hazardous material. That's why no one will ever pick up these buildings. That's why you see so many abandoned buildings in these towns, the brick buildings.
Yeah, well, this one, in this particular case, all asbestos had been removed. And in the case in Detroit where all those buildings are selling, they are working a program. They're trying to revitalize, of course, because there's nobody in Detroit. So they're trying to revitalize Detroit. So anything like that, asbestos, is being removed by the city.
Wow. Well, that's a steal then. I mean, this is a beautiful building.
Isn't that a beautiful building? Look at that. I mean, that's a freaking castle. 40,000 square feet. I mean, you could house how many families in that sucker? I mean, really?
Well, it looks like they turned this one into apartments.
No, well, just one apartment. It was a couple that they bought. They bought the building, and they put an apartment and an office in there. But the rest of the building was still pretty much untouched. They cleaned up the hall and cleaned out some of the debris. I talked with them for about an hour on this facility. But yeah, it's enormous, and it had a gymnasium with four basketball hoops. Had a nice, really nice auditorium with seating in there and a stage, and lighting was all still in there. It was incredible. Not only that, it had a huge flat roof, and it had a fourth story, or a third story, I believe, up there where you could actually walk out onto the roof. So you could do gardening up on the roof if you wanted.
Well, that's very, very cool. I mean, this is something that... they got an awesome steal on here. There's going to be a lot of cost there replacing all those windows and things like that so they're energy efficient. But that's, for getting something like that for $55,000 is just amazing.
That's a steal, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is start looking. If somebody's interested, I mean, just think about it. The foundation, just the bare bones of these buildings. Now, this one is obviously huge. You don't have to get them this big. There's actually one in your state, Iowa, that I looked at. It was on 3.5 acres, and it was 160, and it was two stories, and it was all brick and heavily built. This one right here that I was showing you was brick and granite. It's amazing. The structures on these, the bare bones of these things are just, you couldn't build something that's heavy duty anymore. So,
yep. I agree. I definitely agree. Well, that's cool. Well, let's see how many more you can come up with. This is a cool thing. I'd also love to see how this project keeps going, because you obviously have to have a lot of time, to be able to get something this big. I mean, they're talking 10 rooms on the third floor. I mean, this thing has three floors, so it's got 10 rooms on the third floor. Looks like 8 rooms on the main floor and 2, 6, 7, 8 rooms on the ground floor. That's a lot of rooms to go through. That's a hotel.
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem is the downside to this is you really can't use it for like apartments or anything like that because most of these, most of the school rooms didn't have plumbing, so it's a lot of expense to build it out. But you could do it. The problem is the reason the school is being sold usually is because there's not very much population in the town, and so chances of you renting out all these apartments, unless a new business comes into the town, is pretty slim. So that's kind of the downfall.
Well, then that's, you kind of have to weigh each option when you're going out and doing it. I mean, obviously, I'm not in a major metropolitan area anymore either. So, sometimes that's part of the appeal for some people is getting to a less populated area.
Right. But I'm just trying to figure out how you just buy 40,000 square feet. What would you do with 40,000 square feet other than rent it out to somebody else, rent sections out, or build a retirement home out of it? I mean, I don't know.
Whether or not you could make money off it. See, I couldn't get something like this just for the simple reason. Yeah, I'd probably fill it up with what I like to call valuable junk. And every room would be filled with stuff that I got at auctions and things like that. I'd be on the next version of Hoarders.
Hoarders. And your wife would be ticked.
Oh, yeah. She'd pretty much kill me. All righty. I think we're at the end of this. Let's go ahead and run through our information. So next week, we'll have a two-hour show. The first hour from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock will be Bubba's Bookshelf. We'll have Marjorie Wildcraft on. And then we'll roll right into Backwoods Home Magazine. If you guys want to check out anything for on Backwoods Home, go to www.backwoodshome.com. The Self-Reliance Expo, the next one's on September 14th and 15th. You can go to selfrelianceexpo.com and check out information on there. Colorado Ron, you now have a new fan page up, and that's what?
It's facebook.com/... Colorado Ron page.
There it is right there. Colorado Ron page. And it's important that you put page in there. Otherwise, it won't come up. So Colorado Ron page. And then Preparedness Radio, as always, and Self-Reliance Expo and Backwoods Home Mag will all get you to the fan pages that are out there. So from Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron, I will talk to you guys next weekend.
Take care.
All right. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Bubba's Bookshelf on the Preparedness. You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters, timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.